This episode will cover the skin, hair, and nails assessment, following Chapter 13 of the Jarvis textbook. The hair and nails are relatively minor topics compared to the skin, so I will first discuss the skin assessment, then quickly cover the hair and nails at the end. Because the skin covers the outside of our bodies, it is an important part of our appearance, and there are also many pathological processes which can also be shown on the skin. Don't get too bogged down in the structure and function setting of the textbook. There are many times when knowing the anatomy, physiology, and pathophysiology will be helpful when learning health assessment techniques and findings, but it is also very easy to get bogged down trying to review all of the minute details in this section. Long story short, the primary job of our skin is to protect us and to keep us warm. Subjective data. There are components of the subjective data which are pretty much always important to ask about, regardless of the organ system in question. This includes asking about the patient's personal history and family history, asking about any medications that the patient is using, and asking about any recent changes to their health. Often we will notice something in our physical assessment, such as a rash, but the significance of that finding will depend largely on whether it has changed recently. That's actually one reason why it is always necessary to ask questions about the things we observe when doing our physical assessment. For pretty much any potential abnormal finding, which in the case of skin may be a bruise, mole, or color change, it is important to ask the patient for subjective data about it. Objective data. First off, when preparing to perform the physical examination, be mindful that temperature changes can cause a change in skin color, as can something as simple as embarrassment or fear. You should make every effort to make the patient comfortable, not only because it's a nice thing to do, but also to improve the accuracy of your assessment. Also, be aware that the skin is assessed bit by bit as the assessment progresses. That is to say, we don't typically strip a patient completely naked in order to observe the skin from head to toe and then move on to assessing the other organ systems. Instead, as we move from head to toe, we will naturally assess the skin over the face. As we assess the face, we will assess the skin over the chest, as we assess the heart and lungs, and so on. The two assessment techniques we're going to use to assess the skin are inspection and palpation. First, let's talk about inspection. First, we're just going to inspect the color of the skin overall. It is important when we're describing skin color that we don't simply describe the skin as normal, but to say that it's normal for ethnicity or consistent with genetic background. Specific widespread color changes that we're assessing for include pallor and erythema. These are two sides of the same coin. Remember that a lot of our skin color is actually a product of the blood that's underneath, that's flowing underneath the skin. So if there's less blood going to an area, then a patient will appear pale. But if there's extra blood flowing to a particular area, then it will look erythematous. They'll have erythema. Another widespread color change to look out for is cyanosis. Cyanosis is a bluish color which occurs when there's decreased oxygen saturation. Remember that hemoglobin is a protein which is supposed to bind to oxygen in the lungs and then deliver it to the tissue. If somebody has a low oxygen saturation, that means there's a lot of hemoglobin that's not bound to oxygen. When light bounces off of that kind of hemoglobin, then it has this bluish color. The last widespread color change that we're going to talk about is jaundice. Jaundice is a yellowish color, which is caused by a buildup of bilirubin. Typically, the body is able to break down and excrete bilirubin fast enough that it doesn't cause this yellowish color, but there are a lot of different types of problems that can happen where the bilirubin will build up. Jaundice can sometimes be difficult to notice, and especially in someone who has very dark colored skin, but the easiest and most reliable way to look for jaundice is actually in the whites of the eyes, in the sclera of the eyes. In addition to these widespread changes, we're also going to be looking for more localized problems. We're going to be looking for lesions. The term lesion is a catch-all term which can refer to just about any kind of abnormality to a specific part of the skin. This word is often used interchangeably with the word rash. I will provide a more thorough discussion on lesions later on in this episode. For now, let's move on to palpation. As you palpate the skin, notice the temperature of the skin, the moisture, the texture of it, the thickness of it. You're also going to be looking for edema. Edema is when there's fluid stuck underneath the skin. We're going to be discussing edema more in the future, but for now, just understand this general concept that edema is fluid stuck underneath the skin. To assess the turgor of the skin, simply pinch a fold of skin and then suddenly let go, and it should immediately snap back. The best place to do this is in the chest, the upper chest, just underneath the collarbone. There's a flap of skin that's easy to pinch there. You pinch it, you let go, and it should snap back into place. Any lesions that you inspected with your eyes, you're also going to want to palpate those with your hands. Feel to see if they are raised at all or if there's any kind of change in temperature compared to the skin around it, a change in the texture compared to the skin around it, anything along those lines. If the skin over a lesion is a different color than the surrounding skin, it is also helpful to put pressure on it to see if it blanches with pressure. Pushing down will squeeze the blood away from the lesion, and if you suddenly lift your hand and look at the lesion, if the color change has disappeared, then we would say that the lesion blanched with pressure. If the color change is exactly the same even after you push pressure on it, then it does not blanch with pressure. Skin lesions. For most students, there's nothing conceptually difficult about skin lesions. It's not difficult to understand that a papule is a lesion that is solid, elevated, circumscribed, and less than 1 centimeter in diameter. What is difficult is trying to memorize all the different terms that are suddenly introduced all at once. The bad news is that, yes, you do have to learn these terms. Resources you encounter in your later classes and in practice will assume that you know them. For example, a resource may describe a particular reaction as causing urticaria without stopping to describe what urticaria is. The good news is that these terms will progressively get easier as you actually encounter them in context, instead of just trying to learn a bunch of words to describe things you've never seen before, which is what we're doing here. A podcast episode is not the best way to study skin lesion terminology, so I will refer you to your textbook, especially tables 13.3, 13.4, and 13.5, which give excellent descriptions and illustrations, and I will also put a link in the description to this episode to a flashcard deck which will help you learn the most important terms. Quite a few of the terms that you need to learn are primary skin lesions. Here's a way that I organize these concepts in my head. I hope it's helpful to you. A macule is the simplest type of skin lesion. It's flat, it's small, there's nothing interesting about it except that there's a change in pigmentation. That's a macule, a flat, small skin lesion. If that macule is big, if it's greater than 1 centimeter, then that's a patch. If it's like a macule but it happens to be raised a little bit, that is a papule. If a papule is greater than 1 centimeter in diameter, then that is called a plaque. If a lesion is raised, but the lesion actually extends deep into the skin, that's no longer a papule, that's called a nodule. If it's very large, then that's actually called a tumor. If a lesion happens to be raised and fluid-filled, then it's a vesicle. If a vesicle is larger than 1 centimeter, then that is a bulla. If a fluid-filled vesicle is encapsulated, that is a cyst. If the lesion is pus-filled, then that is a pustule. So again, if it's flat, small, it's a macule. If it's really big for a macule, then it's a patch. If it's raised and it's shallow, it's a papule. If it's greater than 1 centimeter, that's a plaque. If it's raised and deep, that's a nodule. If it's large, then that's called a tumor. If it's raised and fluid-filled, then that's a vesicle. If it's greater than 1 centimeter, that's a bulla. If it's encapsulated, then that's a cyst. If it's pus-filled, it is a pustule. The only primary skin lesion found in table 13.4 that I didn't mention just now is a wheal, W-H-E-A-L. A mosquito bite will cause a wheal. So you just think back to the last time that you had a mosquito bite, think about what that lesion looked like, that is a wheal. Hair and nails. With regards to hair, there is a wide range of normal findings. Specific abnormal findings that we are looking out for include alopecia, which is a fancy word for hair loss. On the other side of alopecia, there's hirsutism, where there's excessive hair. We should also assess for a lice infestation. For lice, the actual insects themselves are very small and very difficult to see with the naked eye, but the eggs are fairly easy to spot. They're white in color, and they're always found close to the scalp, attached to the hair shaft. Hair is also an important indicator of pubertal development, so we want to also assess whether it is appropriate for the age of the patient. When assessing the nails, a normal finding would be smooth, regular, well-groomed. A nail bed can also be assessed for capillary refill. This is when you squeeze the nail bed for at least 5 seconds, and this will squeeze the blood away from the nail bed, causing it to turn pale. Then by suddenly releasing pressure, you can see how long it takes for the color to return. The color should return in less than 2 seconds. You should also assess for clubbing of the nails. Clubbing of the nails is something that happens to the nail bed when somebody is deprived of oxygen for a long period of time. Normally, the base of the nail bed, where it meets the skin, should create about a 160-degree angle. Clubbing of the nails will cause that angle to flatten out to 180 degrees, and the nail base will become soft and spongy. The nails should also be assessed for evidence of nail biting or poor grooming. The aging adult. The skin of an aging adult will be drier and thinner. It'll be less elastic, which will cause decreased skin turgor. They'll also have what's called senile lentigines, more commonly known as liver spots, which are macules seen in parts of the body that have been the most exposed to the sun. Their hair will turn gray in color and become relatively coarse and brittle, and men will actually grow extra hairs coming out of their ears and their nose, and many will show male pattern baldness as well. Nails will be relatively bitter with slower capillary refill. Normal limit for an older adult extends up to about 4 seconds. And with that, I will conclude this episode on the skin, hair, and nails assessment. Thanks for listening.